And so I will thank you very much. Again, good morning, everyone. Dr. Holt, and I'm the facilitator for the Bond Oversight Committee. And today is the 3rd of February, 2022, and it is our first Bond Oversight Committee meeting of the year. So welcome into the meeting. Look forward to the conversation that we're going to have. We've got quite a bit of material to cover. If you see me staring off to the right, it's not because I'm wandering off into space. I've got two screens, and the screen off to the right lets me see everyone. The screen I'm looking into helps you see and hear me. And you'll also notice that my name is in twice, not because I'm cloned, but because I'm literally in twice. So welcome, and let's do something amazing together. Roll call, Annalise, how are you?
Good morning, everyone. Annalisa Curler, present.
And Todd Struble.
Good morning, everyone. Todd Struble, Bond Oversight Committee Chair, and I'm the Community Development Director at Afano. Thanks.
Good morning, Alan Lazo.
Good morning, all. Alan Lazo, Bond Oversight Committee member with the Fair Housing Council of Oregon.
Excellent. Welcome in, everyone. Let's go to the review of the minutes, Oversight Committee. If you take a moment, make sure that you are comfortable with the minutes as sent out from our last meeting. And if someone would indicate their position around it.
I move to approve minutes from the last meeting.
Is there a second? There's a motion.
I'll second.
Awesome. It's been moved in second. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. Minutes have been approved. I mentioned a moment ago that we are going to have time for public testimony. And you have an opportunity, hopefully an opportunity to sign up or indicate that you, those who are guests in the space, were interested in interacting related to the work of the Bond Oversight Committee. Do we have anyone who has indicated an interest for public testimony? Or did I go through that too rapidly? It's 2 minutes per person. You can submit your testimony also via the chat feature. If you don't want to talk, you can do that.
Dr. Holt, this is Tanya Wolfersberger, PHB. We don't have anyone in the chat so far, but we can give it a minute or two to let folks decide if they have any testimony they'd like to provide.
Okay, we will move forward in our agenda. Our next item is our project milestones. Jill Chen, I believe you are up first.
This is Jill Chen. I'm with PHB, Housing Investments and Portfolio Preservation Manager. And I'll go through a couple slides about where the projects are. And I am very pleased to announce that all of our 2019 bond opportunity solicitation projects are now financially closed and are in construction. So as you see on this slide, it shows you where our, you can call it the production is in terms of open construction and pre-development. And since our last bond oversight committee meeting, 3000 Powell closed in mid-November. Anna Mann closed on the last day of November, and Joyce closed right before Christmas. So we had a nice Christmas present, you can say. So in terms of the status, two projects are open and 10 are in construction. There are some, as you know, we will be monitoring all the projects on an ongoing basis. I did want to, however, highlight with the Bond Oversight Committee that even though they're closed and we're moving forward and everything is smooth right now, we're also seeing from our developers that things are tight in the supply chain, as you know, and the impacts of COVID is still ongoing. So we are really monitoring the construction and the production of these really tightly. A rising issue that is not related with the current projects is the fact that the private activity bonds, which generate the 4% low-income housing tax credits, which is in all of our projects, is tight, meaning the allocation that's used for the state is limited and has been fully allocated based on the current pipeline that OHCS has. However, the good news is that it will not impact any of our current, you can call it projects in construction. So it's really fantastic that all the bond opportunity solicitation projects are closed and in construction. Next slide, please. Also some good news for all of you is we will have a number of projects opening this year. Six of them are targeted and they will produce a total of 587 affordable units throughout the city. And you'll see those are the six projects. Crescent Court, which is 138 units, will be opening in April. Next coming up is Hayu Tulixim with 50 units in June. Then in September, we have a couple of projects planned. The first one is Cathedral Village with 110. And then Emmons Place, the south building only with 48 units. And then the following months will be Los Adelitas with 141 units. And then finally, West Wind targeted in November of 2022. So this is very exciting. Of course, we are hoping that there may be some grand openings, all that, and of course, we'll let all of you know as well for those celebrations. As a side, for the city as a whole, we will be opening a total of 841 units plus one rehab. So this will be a very exciting year of seeing a ton of folks, low-income folks being housed. So, thanks, and next slide, and I will hand it over to my colleague, Chris.
Well, actually, before we do that, thanks, Jill. I want to give space for any questions. I mean, this is incredible information. We don't want to just lump it all together. I'm sure that there's probably some feedback or thoughts from the Oversight Committee members. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to call you by name. If you've got a comment, excellent. If not, then we'll just go forward. We'll do it in the name of our, in the order of our roll call. So Annalise, we'll begin with you.
No, thank you, Dr. Holt, and thank you for this presentation. No, it's really nice to get some good news, and this is fantastic news all across the board to like finally see so many of these buildings being opened in the next year. It is a great moment of hope. Curious your comments on the private activity bond cap moment, and I know that all of the kind of projects from the last round are fine, but obviously we are considering other projects right now. Is it two, I think? And curious if you can answer how those might be impacted by the bond cap.
Certainly. PHB has been working with OHCS and monitoring the bond cap actually for a while. It's been known, I guess back in the fall, I think it was October, November, OHCS announced that they had a pause in pre-applications for all 4% LIHTC. Currently, there's a separate committee called Private Activity Bond Committee, And just for, I may be geeking out a little bit too much, Annalise, the state of Oregon gets allocated $466 million across the state. The Private Activity Bond Committee is the, you can call it the allocator of private activity bonds. OHCS statutorily gets 250, Business Oregon gets 41, both of those on a statutory basis. The balance of it can be granted to different entities, being at housing authorities, being other entities who may seek private activity bonds. Since the halt of sort of pre-applications, we have been working with OHCS, as have a number of other jurisdictions and interested parties, including Metro, in providing OHCS the list of all the pipeline projects. And OHCS recently just started a working group to go through what to do with the pipeline project and what are the policies, or you can call it the framework for allocating private activity bonds. One of PHB's, you can call it, needs have always been that projects that have Portland bond and Metro bonds, because they're time constrained, should have priority. And OHCS have acknowledged that this is a factor in what they would like to see later on. But knowing that our projects are not yet in that pipeline does leave some uncertainty. So in terms of timing, OHCS has indicated that in the April Private Activity Bond Committee meeting, they plan to put forward a plan for the allocation. They have already sought the Private Activity Bond Committee for the carry forward, and that has been granted. There is still, however, tightness, because even with the carry forward, it's not necessarily sufficient to cover all the affordable housing projects that's currently in the pipeline. I want to make sure I leave some time for Molly and Shannon if they want to jump in on this question.
Jill, I think you've done a very good job covering a lot of the issues that are involved. I think generally there's grave uncertainty as to what happens with any future affordable housing projects that use LIHTC. And I think that this afternoon, we're going to be talking with you about the projects that we're awarding funding from under the Portland, the last remaining resources for the Portland Housing Bond. And I think, you know, our belief is that we should continue to advance forward and helping projects get ready. But I also think we need to be very active with how OHCS and the state decide to address the private activity bond situation. And by that, I think we need to talk about local priorities very clearly. You know, our community has set very clear priorities in our bond frameworks, as well as our North and Northeast Oversight Committee work and other areas of the city. And I think that that we need to ensure that those are coming to the forefront of decisions that are being made, at least in Portland, because there are a number of projects that OHCS has funded with LIHTC that are not necessarily moving ahead and advancing some of the strategies that the city has set as local priorities with our community. I think that's a conversation we need to have more fully. And I think, you know, I think there's also, I think we need to consider a legislative strategy and talking about a greater certainty of allocation for private activity bonds. And Jill, did you mention the Build Back Better issue at all? I didn't catch that.
I did not, because, go ahead.
Well, you know, there is a possibility of a modest change in LIHTC that was in the Build Back Better bills that are, as I've last seen, not doing well at the federal level. And it could provide a lot of relief locally. It's a small provision. I also think we should, as an affordable housing community, talk about, you know, can we work with our federal delegation to talk about moving that provision forward even outside of the Build Back Better bill. So I think I frankly think there's a lot of work for us to do on all fronts to try to resolve the LIHTC issue. So there, it will delay projects, though. It will delay projects rather significantly.
Excellent. Molly, were you going to comment at all? Okay. Thank you. Todd, any questions?
No, not at this moment. Now I'm just absorbing what I just heard. So thank you.
Absolutely. Alan.
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Holt. And thanks, Jill, for all that. And I actually echo everything that Annalise said and really had the exact same question kind of about the impact of private activity bonds. And I just want to clarify for myself and for folks, both the impact and the timeline that we're talking about here of that potential piece. But Jill, I think I heard you say it wouldn't impact any of the projects that we're currently looking at. Is that right? So it's just the two new, so those all have committed LIHTC stacks, everything they have for 4%. Okay. All right. So it's just the two new ones that we, or any other projects that sort of aren't built into that pipeline yet.
That's correct, Alan. All the projects that have financially closed, meaning all the 12 projects or the 10 projects in construction, those are guaranteed the LIHTC. And for those of us, or just in terms of the impact on LIHTC, is the private activity bonds generate the LIHTC, and LIHTC is about a third of all the, you can call it the capital stack. So if LIHTC goes away, somewhere else, we'll need to figure out where that gap is.
Yeah. And I just want to be clear on timeline then, especially for bond pieces, because again, we're just talking about those potentially those last projects coming in. So is the time horizon, is it the 5-year mark of the bond? Is that, so what's the exact time horizon for, so if we had a project that got delayed because the LIHTC and their stack went away, what's the clock to get it back on track, basically?
So Alan, we committed when we referred the Portland Housing Bond to project funding commitments within 5 to 7 years. And officially the measure started, even though it was passed in November of 2016, in January of 2017. So we have just completed our, 2021, the end of the year would have been the 5-year mark. So today you will hear us announce our final recommendations for resources. So we have made that commitment. And as you know, we had already achieved all the goals that we had committed to voters prior. So anything that we're announcing are just additional achievements. And so of course we are wanting to advance those projects as quickly as possible, but we have met all of the original commitments to voters when we referred the measure. And as you may, as you may recall, supportive housing was actually not something we made a firm commitment to in the measure itself, but did through our stakeholder advisory group framework. So we feel going back into the original documents for referral, we believe we have met the original intent of our commitments.
Great. Yeah, thank you, Shannon. That's really helpful. I appreciate that. And I agree. I think things are going fantastically, and it'd be great to get these last pieces across the finish line to really boost things up. But as always, some complications along the way that you all are juggling. So appreciate that. So thank you. That's all the questions I have.
Thank you very much. Let me welcome in Susan. Susan, good to see you. Welcome into the meeting.
I apologize for being late. My watch stopped and then I was looking at my computer and I thought, what time is it? So I'm very sorry. I guess I have to get a new watch. I'm thrilled with the progress that's being made. I mean, I reviewed everything that was in our packet and I'm walking by Emmons Place all the time and seeing them really making progress. So I'm very excited about it. And yeah, just thrilled with everything.
Wonderful. Thank you. Now we are going to move to the next item on the agenda, which is the quarterly expenditure report, and Chris actually is punting. It is going to be Leslie Goodloe who will be giving this report.
Well, good morning, everyone. I am going to give you some information on our expenditure report as of December 31st. We have expended and committed funds. They include the 7% program development fee. We've had a significant shift in the expended versus the committed due to continued disbursements on ongoing construction and all 2019 BOSS projects under construction, as you've heard already. The reserves were reduced from $5 million to zero, given all projects are in construction and no need for reserves for on the committed projects. As a result, funds for future projects include remaining funds and interest slash credits increased to over $56 million. The spending increase shows dramatically in the graph as the commitments portion is giving way to the expended portion. Interest and credits continue to grow, totaling over $1.8 million as the issued but unused bond funds earned additional interest. As noted in April and July, the bond delivery expense percentage has dropped below 7% as the bond project expenses grow. And next quarter, these trends should continue as construction continues. And that is the report. And if you have questions, Chris and I are here to hopefully answer them for you.
Excellent, excellent. Let's go in reverse order. I will begin with Susan. Any questions?
I don't have any questions.
Okay. Ellen.
Thanks, Dr. Holt, and thanks, Leslie. No, I don't have any questions this morning.
Okay. Todd, any questions?
I also don't have any questions. Thank you.
Annalise?
No questions. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Ms. Goodloe, for the report. Chris, appreciate your readiness to jump in. We will continue and our annual report with Martha Callahan.
Dr. Holt, Shannon Callahan, I am actually going to take this item in Martha's stead this morning. I wanted to let you know, sorry, Dr.
Well, let me actually introduce you. I mean, at least, you know, tee it up for you.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Holt.
And now we will have our next section in our community, the annual report by Director Callahan.
Thank you, Dr. Holt, nice to be with you this morning, Bond Oversight Committee members. We are in the process of beginning preparations for an annual report that both will be externally facing to the community as well as your annual report that you provide to Portland City Council each year. We are planning on having that report at this time at City Council, I think you will know, on April 6th at 2 p.m. And so your report is usually pretty technical to Council because it also covers financial information, et cetera, as does our external report. But part of what we wanted to talk with you about is some of our thinking about how we would structure the externally facing report and get your feedback on things you think we should be helping you prepare to highlight. Traditionally, we help draft portions of the report for your editing to Council. And so this is a time for us to have a discussion about some things you think we should be highlighting in this year's annual report. I would be happy to take your thoughts first, or if you'd like, give you a little bit of our thinking, if it helps stoke the brain fires, as it were. So go forward with some thoughts, Alan, is what you want me to do. Is that a thumbs up for that? Yep. So our thinking this year is, first of all, that we are still in a virtual world, and that although we may hope that April looks different, We think it's really important that this report is accessible to people virtually. We've been conducting some on-site interviews with folks who are working on the bond projects. I think one of the things that was our, as you know, one of our commitments was to equity and opportunity through construction jobs. And as we have so many projects under construction and so many diverse contractors and apprentices working on these projects, we thought it would be good to highlight not only what these projects will look like in the end, but the opportunity they provide to communities through the construction dollars. We also think this year would be a great year to highlight all the projects that will be open this year. We were thinking of inviting along with you, of course, to present, asking each of the teams with projects to briefly come and say a few words about the project and what it will mean to the people who will be living in those new developments. So that is some of our thinking this year. I think you may also recall our auditors have asked us with our external facing report to go deeper into some of the financials. So we will be doing some revamped work on trying to explain what we're spending on each project, et cetera. So we're working on that internally to try to express complex financial information in a simplified and yet important manner. You always do this when you go to council, but our external facing report has not quite looked the same just because it's been a little glossier, honestly. So these are kind of our first initial thoughts about the presentation, both to council and externally. And I'm wondering if you have thoughts or other things you think we should be highlighting, you would like to highlight.
Excellent. I will take us through kind of the calling by name and give everyone an opportunity to process. I will start with Alan.
Thanks, Dr. Holt. Let's see, the question of what we'd like to highlight. I like everything that you said, Shannon, about, I agree, the financial piece, I'm not sure how to do that, but I think it is important. And maybe, you know, I think this question that comes up a lot, especially on public facing sides, is this sort of administrative cost piece. And we know that was capped in the bond. And so that may be a piece that folks might be interested in. And so maybe it's kind of that graph that showed the different pieces of the pie. I don't know, but anyway, but yeah, I think you've got a simplified way of showing those I don't need to think folks are as interested as some others in the deep details, but those kind of broad, answering those broad financial questions. The other piece I'd say is, you know, given where we are, and maybe it's a little dangerous to think out loud in a meeting like this, but I'll do it, is the sense that of the accomplishments that we've had, this sort of, you know, our work is never done, but we've reached these goals that we set out for ourselves, but also recognizing that there's a bigger context in our community, that we're never going to fully be able to meet the needs of affordable housing in our community, and the context that, as you said, you know, Shannon, that you know, partway through this, we also added the goals around permanent supportive housing, especially reflecting what's happening, again, in other parts of the community where there's support for that supportive housing. So I think there's a lot of context that's moved with the work that you all have been doing. And again, the sense that we are accomplishing the goals we set out to, but this is only one tool in a much bigger context of a housing issue in our community that lots of different pieces are trying to solve. And that this, you know, building units on the ground that are opening now, and the goals that we set are really being accomplished on this side. And that folks can hopefully see that, and we'll start to see the impacts over the coming years. So again, this sense that we're moving towards our finish line, but certainly the bigger finish line is much further down the road, but the accomplishments of this are pretty extraordinary over the last few years. So whole big rambling for me on that.
Thanks, Al.
Otherwise, that's all I have.
Appreciate that. Elise?
Thank you, Dr. Hull. And thank you, PHB staff, for putting some initial thoughts together. I think they all sound really good. I like the idea that it wouldn't just be bond oversight committee members up there, that we would have, I don't know, for lack of a word, real people up there alongside us, helping tell the story. I like the idea that part of the story that we're telling, obviously, is about ensuring everyone has a safe, stable place to go home. But in addition, the workforce component is critical and is really important, and I think poignant in this moment. So that all sounds really good to me. I do not have any creative ideas about how to make financial information more digestible for the broader public, but good luck. I think it is actually something that is really important, and is important from just making sure we're, you know, showcasing transparency and accountability from government.
Excellent. Susan, comments?
Yeah, I also like what I've heard about what the thinking is so far. For me, always what's just most profound is to hear personal stories about people who are being impacted. And that's what I share in this other group that I'm co-chairing, the Metro Oversight Committee. And I think we had some of that. They were doing first quarter reports on the SHS funding, and so brought providers in and told some stories. So I like the idea of project teams. And just as much as we can, I mean, I'd be happy to try to be part of that. I know it's hard to bring individuals who've been housed through these projects, or potentially will, but I think some succinct stories can be very moving. And I just had an interaction with a woman who'd been outside for 8 years and got housed right before Christmas. And I ran into her over the weekend, and she had something to share with me that I had never heard. It was a quote from Maya Angelou that she had written down for me, and just want to read it. "The ache for home lives in all of us, the safe place where we can go as we are and not be questioned." And she said the housing that she got in December through one of our providers who will be involved with one of these projects made that possible for her. So I was very moved by it. I'd been following her progress, but then just didn't hear the final outcome. So as much as we can do that, I think that will be very meaningful to city council and others watching.
Tanya, there you go. You caught it. Sorry, Susan. Tanya was just sharing her email up, and I don't know if she wanted that recorded for all posterity. Susan, thank you for that. I hadn't heard that Maya Angelou quote. I'm actually, I think it warms my heart to hear that. I don't know if we, obviously we have projects that have people living in them, developments that have people living in them, but it would be nice to see if we could get some people to come and talk about how this is making a difference in their life.
Yes. Thank you, Todd. We want to hear from you, sir.
Oh, I have to follow Maya Angelou now. I didn't come prepared. Actually, I think looking at last year's, I agree with Susan, like the resident stories, that was in last year's annual report that's on the website. And I think that's always really powerful. In terms of making the financial discussions more accessible, I guess I was thinking something that might be good to highlight or is to chat with the development teams and see, like, maybe get stories of how the bond has made, like, what the process was like for them in terms of making development easy. Because I think we hear a lot about how red tape and government bureaucracy get in the way of housing affordability. And so to hear maybe direct stories around how this bond was the catalyst for a lot of these projects might actually be really useful for the public to hear. So I'm not sure what that would look like, but from my perspective, I think that'd be nice to hear.
Excellent. Any questions or comments or responses, Director Callahan, to what you've heard?
I am so appreciative of the thought you've all put into this. And I agree that it would be a great idea to try to incorporate the different voices and talking about what these projects have meant as well, Todd, for the development teams and our partners. I know for many of them, you know, I think a lot of, all of our projects are very special to us, but I think a lot of, frankly, Las Adelitas and how long the community worked to change that project. And frankly, you know, there is, without bond resources, I don't think that project would have happened. And it's amazing that it's, that will open soon this year. So I like that. And I also like highlighting what I think are real positives. I think it's hard right now with so many people who are hurting so deeply and so many people who are unhoused to feel very celebratory sometimes about the progress we do make. So I appreciate all of your comments, especially Alan. I think you were hitting on that a little bit with acknowledging, you know, that this will not solve all of our housing or poverty related problems, but it will, you know, it will make a big difference for the people who are housed. And I think that's why we do this, right? Is because of people like who Susan met. And I kind of really want to take the Maya Angelou quote and make it the headline of the bond annual report. I don't know about taking quotes like that. But anyway, thank you all for your thoughtful comments and look for us to come back. And we'll probably do more communicating with you by email and give you some concepts of products and in process. And thank you all for also committing your time to come to council in April. We really appreciate that.
Excellent. I think we've covered this portion. We'll move to our next on our agenda, which is our demographics update on the Ellington and East Burnside. Jennifer Chang.
Good morning, everyone, committee members, as well as guests. My name is Jennifer Chang, she, her pronouns, senior policy coordinator at the Portland Housing Bureau. And I just wanted to spend a few minutes to share some updates on the demographics of the two city-owned projects that are bond, Portland bond projects, the Ellington, as well as the East Burnside property. Now that is part of our regular reporting to you is the just put providing some demographics around the households that are being served at these two projects. Next slide, please. So this is these numbers share some combined information around the different households being served at both properties. So it's combined. There's a total of 314 units, of which about a little over 80% are family-sized units. There are 312 children that are currently residing at these two properties and a total of 826 residents. And then we also have another data point around the households that identify as senior households, so 55 and older, or who have a household with a member living with a disability. And so this comprises a little over 26% of the total units have households that are either senior households or households with a member, a household member living with a disability. And just to note, we definitely are aware this is a combination of two categories, very distinct categories. We have been working closely with our partners at Home Forward to disaggregate those two categories because for one of the properties, they currently, their reporting tool combines them into a single category. So we are working on that and we'll have them disaggregated for the next reporting round. Next slide, please. So this slide shares demographics around both household income and head of household race and ethnic identity. So on the left, you see the income of households that close to 60% or 58% of the units are at 30% AMI and below. And then there is a smaller portion of of households that are at the 31 to 60% AMI level. And then there's a very small portion, the 7%, where there are households that are over 60% residing in them. This is based on households that had been previously current residents in the Ellington property at the time it was acquired. And also it includes a very small number of households who have actually earned income and increased income over the last several years as they've been residing in housing at one of these properties. In terms of the race and ethnicity breakout, just to note that the data is based on 2020 census data. So also there's a smaller size of units. It's based just on the number of units at Ellington, which is around 300 or 260, and then the East Burnside property. And so based on the data most recent, which is from November of 2021, it shows that our properties have a higher representation of households identifying as African American and Native American or Alaskan Native in comparison to the surrounding census tracts. And also the data shows a lower representation among households identifying as Latinx, Asian, and Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander, again, in comparison to the surrounding census tracts for those properties. And as we are looking into this, we are working with Home Forward as well as the property management teams to better understand the projects, each project's plans around their affirmatively furthering fair housing plans, as well as their outreach and marketing strategies, to see where we can work to strengthen the outreach and lease up opportunities, particularly at the time as new units become vacant, so that we're ensuring increased access for households in these communities. Next slide, please. And then, let's see. Thank you. We also just wanted to highlight the service partnerships that are in place at both properties. You may recall this, but first with our East Burnside property, it was a brand new property at the time we opened it. And so all of the lease up was occurring through partnerships, through community partners, as well as through homeless service partners through the Joint Office of Homeless Services. And so over the last several years, over 60% of the units were referred through community partner agencies, and a little over half of those were referred directly through the Joint Office, through homeless service providers, particularly related to the providing referrals for the 16 supportive housing units at East Burnside. Many of the partnership team that is serving the PSH units at East Burnside is a program called the Mobile PSH Team. It's comprised of several organizations, over eight, including over 80% of that collaboration is culturally specific partners, including SEI, NARA, and NEA, and also includes JOIN as the lead for that team. And Impact Northwest, POIC, and others. And then for our Ellington property, this was the first project that was acquired with Portland bond funds. We have a new service partner in place with El Programa Hispano. We finalized and formalized the updated MOU a few months ago. And so El Programa's staff and team will be providing services for the supportive housing units at Ellington. And then Home Forward will continue to provide the resident services support for the whole property. So I think at this time I will pause to see if there are any questions or clarifications from the committee.
Thank you very much. We will begin with Todd.
Nothing for me, thank you.
All right, Alan.
Thanks, Dr. Holt. Hey, General, this is it's kind of a combination of a question and a comment, and I think it's more kind of forward-looking. In the slides that you presented today, it has the East Burnside and Ellington race and ethnicity data combined. And then when I look back at I wasn't sure if there was data by each location. And when I look back at the annual report from last year, it is actually disaggregated by location. And in hearing you talk, it sounds like we definitely have that by location. And so maybe just for the presentation, it was combined. And I'm kind of torn a little bit, especially from a fair housing perspective to some degree. But I think it would be important to have the analysis that you just talked about by location around race and ethnicity demographics, and particularly appreciate what you say about how it fits with the surrounding demographics. And so I'm just not sure what the plan is moving forward as that information gets presented. I don't know if it was aggregated just for this presentation or if it's something that you all will continue to analyze and share with folks. Because again, you know, from my perspective, really exactly that, you know, looking for those opportunities where we can open opportunities in different parts of the city by location would be important to track. So it sounds like you've got the data, and I just don't know if the plan is moving forward. And again, I'm torn on whether or not it should be presented by location or aggregated. So just wanted to bring that up and see if it was something that you all had thought about presentation-wise.
Yeah, so it was combined for the sake of this presentation specifically. Yes, and I mean, my personal opinion is that we, you know, and we'll talk with the team too, you know, is that moving forward and in our ongoing reports, we'll continue to keep it disaggregated by property. I think it's important because it shows different pictures, right? In terms of who is being served and where the potential gaps are. But thank you for that comment.
Excellent. Our next question, we will go to Susan.
Yeah, I appreciate the information. It sounds like the referral process is really working well. And I think that was all theoretical in the beginning about the Ellington, like who is going to refer what the partnerships. And so it sounds like that's really settled in and worked well. I guess my question about permanent supportive housing, maybe over the long haul, is are people being retained? Are people staying there as their turnover? And how is that working? Because again, as I talk to other providers, some of this is really new, people getting involved in this and taking on people with multiple needs and what the supports are going to have to be to create stability and really have it work. So I'd like to hear about that at some point, but it doesn't have to be today. But thank you for the report.
Jennifer, did you want to respond at all? Thanks, Susan.
No, I think that's an important thing to keep in mind, and as part of our record and kind of accountability is how are we best capturing retention of different households. So I think there's a couple ways we can go through that, and in terms of both through the program service provider outcomes and reporting, as well as also with the property. So we'll be sure to bring that back to the bond team and process through that.
Excellent. Annalise.
No, thank you so much for the presentation. I have no questions.
Jennifer, anything else?
Not at this time. I'll pass it to Tanya I'll pass it back to you, Dr. Holt, for the next portion.
We can lob. It's okay. Yes, Tanya, I believe you have the next section.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Holt, and hi, everyone. I'm Tanya Wolfersberger, she, her pronouns, and I am a housing program coordinator here at the Bureau, and I'm happy to be here and present to you all kind of a new template for our bond project team presentations. As you recall, over the last year or so, we've invited project teams to come in and update the oversight committee on kind of where their projects are in terms of the pre-development process or the development process, a chance for you all to kind of refresh your memories on all of the projects that are under the Portland Bond Program and meet some of the project team members. And so as our projects are now moving into the construction phase and the opening and operational phase, we thought that we would kind of revamp our project team presentation templates that we ask folks to come in and present information to you. Wanted to just get a run those that new template process by you all and get your feedback to confirm that the information that we'll be asking project teams to present is everything that you would like to hear and make sure that it's clear for you all. So again, this is not, we don't have a guest presenter this time. This is merely to go over a new template to invite folks back in to present new information to you all. So of course, we're gonna have our little title slide with hopefully a nice picture of the project where it stands. And again, some of these couple slides will just be refreshers on the project themselves. So we wanna ask teams to come back in and provide a project overview that includes information about the project team, including the developer, the property manager, the service providers, and any other partnerships that are going to be active in the project site itself. And then also asking project teams to come in and talk about kind of where is their project in terms of the milestone schedule. Have they completed construction? If not, when do they think they'll get temporary certificate of occupancy? When will they be starting lease up activities? When will a grand opening be scheduled, et cetera? So kind of those broad oversight kind of status, progress, milestone information. And then next we want to make sure that we refresh our memories on kind of the project itself in terms of the unit mix. You've seen this little header before in our past project team presentations of just the unit mix by bedroom size and affordability ranges. We'll also ask them to update us on the target population for the project, any on-site amenities, and any design features at the project. So any green building or accessible unit features or trauma-informed design features that the project might include. And then as projects are moving into leasing, and we want to hear about their strategies around outreach to increase the access, housing access for BIPOC and priority communities. So we'll ask them to give us a little bit of update and information on what strategies they're employing to make sure that they're reaching the target population that they have designed to do, and also how they're reaching other BIPOC communities within their areas. And if available, depending on kind of where the project is in their development, we hope that we will also be able to hear some information about initial tenant demographics around applications, referrals, or actual leasing. Then we'll ask our project teams to give us some updates on their equitable contracting outcomes. So a refresher on who is their general contractor, who are their professional consultants, what percentage of construction is complete at that point in time. We'll get an update on where they are in terms of meeting PHB's goals around hard cost contracting and professional services, or those soft costs where we have a goal. I also put in a category around operations. PHB does not have a specific goal around operations, but this is something that some projects may choose to share with us if they have that information. And those kind of categories could be around what contractors the property management companies are employing, things like landscape consultants or janitorial services, anything that the site team may be contracting and employing services that way. And then PHB also has goals around workforce diversity. So we'll be asking teams to come and give us an update on how they're doing in achieving those goals around apprenticeships and journey workers for hours worked by contractors of color or women on those projects as well. And then lastly, we'll be asking around kind of community engagement updates around the work that they have achieved to date on their project. So any community engagement activities that have been conducted while they've been in that construction, that pre-development through construction up to lease up time frame, any partnerships that they have engaged with to conduct those engagement activities. So those could be, you know, community-based, culturally specific, or faith-based partners, or any other kind of neighborhood partners that are adjacent to the project itself. Any demographics on the participants that have participated in those engagement activities, and any outcomes. And by that, we kind of mean, like, was there any outcome in the engagement events that informed project implementation or design, et cetera? So kind of what changed from beginning until end through as a result of those engagement activities. And so that's kind of the overall template that we've developed so far. So I'm curious, we would again just kind of like to hear feedback if you think that those information points will meet your interests, and if you'd like to hear anything else from project teams as we invite them back.
Thank you very much. We will continue in our process. Todd, I will begin with you.
No questions for me, thank you.
Excellent, Susan.
Yeah, it looks very thorough to me. I can't think of anything else I'd want to know at this point, but yeah, thank you for thinking through this so carefully. I mean, I think your reporting is stellar, and I think it's a model for the community. I wish every entity was looking at this kind of work in the way that you are, but yeah, thank you.
Annalise?
This looks great. Yeah, no, thank you. I'm excited to kind of hear this information moving forward.
Alan.
Yeah, thanks, Tanya. The question I have, I think it looks great also. I'm curious about, are we just going to cycle through all of the projects, or will people be coming back? And then also this template, we've had some presentations already. And I can't exactly, it's always great to hear from the teams. I think this is really great. Were they not given a template and a format in the past? And are we asking something different of the teams that are coming in now? And is there a reason for that, to give them that specific direction? I think it's great that we do, but I don't know if they have in the past, I guess. It seems like they kind of had, because we've had kind of the same information from each of the teams, right?
Yeah, that's correct. We've given, we provided all of the project teams a template to use, because partly we wanted to provide you a consistency of information. So you had, kind of a thread and can compare projects one to the next. And also I think it helps them kind of figure out, where to focus the information that they share with you all. So this is kind of just building upon that same process. And we would again, invite back all the teams that we have had come through over the past year or so.
Excellent. Tanya, anything else in this section?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Let's go to our director's update. Director Callahan, we get to hear from you again.
Good morning, everyone. So part of the wonderfulness of my job is getting to share when we're committing to new developments. And today, that's what we have to share with you. But I get to do this part of it, but it is not just me who gets, who has worked to get to this place of even making an announcement. And so I wanted to, thank our entire team at PHB. There are so many folks involved in evaluating and making these selections. And then the folks who aren't involved in the upfront part will be involved throughout the life of the development, throughout the life of the financials, throughout the 99 years of affordability. So it is truly an all bureau effort, but it is also an effort that we rely very heavily on community members to help us make these selections. And
We convene advisory panels that consist of community members who devote their time and energy and truly, really go deep on these proposals to help provide recommendations to move forward. And I know that many of you have participated in solicitations in the past, and some of you participated in these solicitations. And so I wanted to thank you for your thoughtfulness. And I will say one thing before we go on. Alan, it is not two, but three new projects that we are announcing with Portland Housing Fund Resources. So without further ado, I think we'll go right to, and by the way, this is our announcement. You are the first outside of the Bureau and those who have gotten award calls to hear this, and we will be doing a press release later this afternoon. So, Tanya?
Before I stop sharing and switch screens, I just want to leave you with this updated map just to show you our current projects and, that all of those in pre-development changed to in construction. So a brief celebration just to that fact alone.
So Tanya is behind the scenes working to switch the PowerPoints for you all, and it takes a little bit more work than you think when we're all kind of working in this virtual world, trying to get all the documents out of the system, as it were. But what I will give you a preview of is, I think, as you remember, we had asked to invite back our development partners to resubmit with slight adjustments for supportive housing projects and to try to achieve the geographic diversity we had wanted to achieve with the bond resources in Southwest Portland. And so we have selected what we call dedicated supportive housing project, which means it is intensive wraparound services, and the entire building will be devoted to supporting people who require those wraparound services to help them exit homelessness. We have selected one, we call integrated building, which is a building where supportive housing is offered. There are other resident services, but not everyone in the building is receiving supportive housing services. We find that a mix of buildings of this type help us meet the individual needs of those who are needing, some people need more intense services in a peer environment, and some do better with a integrated environment. And then we also have selected one Southwest Portland project. So Tanya, if you wanna go ahead to the next slide. So all total with the 15 projects that we expect to commit to, we will be bringing on what we expect to be 1,859 units, to be precise. 774 of those units will be affordable to households who make less than 30% of area median income. We tried really hard to get to 400 on PSH, but we made 399. So very excited about that. And we've also overachieved on our family housing unit. So overall, we will have achieved more than what we told voters in every single category of our commitments, and we're very excited about that. We will have a very small amount of project reserves, as you heard, interest does accumulate. Frankly, it's going to be very tight with these projects, with the amount of funds that we have remaining. And so, of course, with the LIHTC issue, we're going to continue to monitor that. And without further ado, I think we're going to go to the next. Here are the project commitments. Oh, thanks for putting up the balloons to celebrate, Molly. So the dedicated supportive housing project is Francis Clare Place. It is an addendum to the St. Francis development on Southeast Stark. It is a project of Caritas Housing, NARA, and the Afro Village Movement. It will bring 61 low-income, zero-income units, really, to the Central East Side. Frankly, I can't think of a better project at this time for the Central East Side than that. Interestingly enough, we are also doing another project in Southeast Portland It is a project by Related Northwest and Centro Cultural, who has primarily worked up until this point really in Washington County, but is an excellent provider of services. Impact Northwest and Engage are also involved. It is 159 total units, and it brings a range of PSH, deeply affordable, and family-sized units. The project will also include a senior wellness center, art spaces, and a rooftop terrace. Centro Cultural will operate on-site employment and an education mobility center to augment services to support seniors. The project is working to bring in both seniors and family housing. And then finally, in Southwest Portland, we have selected a project called Barber Apartments by Innovative Housing. Innovative Housing is bringing service partners, SACO, ERCO, Black Parent Initiative. It's so hard when we talk in acronyms, isn't it? The Barber Apartments is located in the Southwest Portland's Hillsdale neighborhood on a high transit corridor. It's going to be very close to the light rail line. If you know Barber Boulevard, well, it is actually right next to the Safeway. So it'll have easy transportation access, grocery access. There will be a range of affordable units. And in this project, because we had some latitude in already achieving our 30% goals, we also asked that they include a mix of 45%. So we have some staggering incomes in the building. That was one of the issues with the Portland bond, is we committed to such deep affordability with the 30%, it left us with little room to kind of give some income variation. So this building will have 40%, 45% units, as well as 30% and 60%. It will have 19 family-sized units with Project 8 section vouchers, project-based Section 8 vouchers. And it will have both three-bedroom and four-bedroom apartments. Next slide, please. I wanted to share this map with you all because of our work with supportive housing. This is our progress overall in cooperation with the Joint Office as to where we are with supportive housing and helping. Now, obviously, all of our housing is available to people who are experiencing homelessness, but this is really, supportive housing is really for those who need intensive wraparound services, which is not everyone who's experiencing homelessness, of course. But what you'll see here is with these projects that we are adding, I don't see the total on here. That's, oh, there it is, 1676. Goodness, trying to express complex information. So we made a commitment with the support and direction of Commissioner Fish in 2017 as a community to achieve 2,000 units by 2028, and we are well on track to meet those goals. I think you'll also see here on the little slide bar graph below, we have 456 new units of supportive housing opening this year in Multnomah County, and so we will be continuing to work with our Joint Office and community partners to make sure that those units are, we're matching folks to the units and the services that they require, and also hopefully making real progress for those people who are living in shelters and on our streets right now. And then without final, boy, I feel like I'm going through this very quickly. Maybe I had too much tea this morning. If we could go to the final slide. And here we are. So here is the map of all of the Portland Bond projects. You'll see we've done a little color coding changing and showing what's opening this year, what's opening next, and what's already open, and then the three new projects in development. I think it makes a lovely visual representation. Thank you to our crack communications team. And I just wanted to pause to see if you had any questions or comments. I'm so excited.
Yeah, I don't think you ran through it too quickly, but we'll see. Annalise, comments, questions?
No, just really super excited to kind of come to this final moment in many ways. And glad we were able to make it all work. And yeah, this graphic is, it looks so simple, but it showcases years and years of really hard work to get to this point, and it's really exciting.
Thank you very much, Todd.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And I actually think that the new color coding is really useful to kind of see when folks can expect things to open. I guess it does, that's the question. In development, are we anticipating 2024, 2025?
You know, the situation I think we were talking about earlier, Todd, with LIHTC, is the big challenge in private activity bonds. We would normally be expecting that these projects would meet a pretty rapid timeline. We did consider issues related to readiness to proceed. And frankly, our hope was that we would get all of these projects moving as rapidly as possible. With the fact that the state is not even accepting 4% tax credit applications, we're in an uncertain future in affordable housing development. We pondered what to do here, and we still think that moving forward and getting these projects poised is the best thing that we can do. We've had conversations with OHCS about them prioritizing our local bond resources. However, projects we've already committed to through Metro do not have a funding slot right now. So it is hard to determine the time that these projects will be ready. If we are to rely on LIHTC, if we cannot rely on LIHTC, then these projects face an uncertain future. But I believe that we should commit now and move as aggressively as possible. And I think I'm hopeful that the state will understand the value of moving voter-approved resources forward and prioritizing leveraging local resources in the pipeline. There's a lot of things we need to do to work with them on that. But we have to proceed ahead. And I think people in the state are interested in making sure that their money that they're paying for already as voters and being taxed for are utilized well. And so I remain hopeful and yet don't have certainty.
Great, thank you. I guess I'm just trying to think of it's amazing that we have these three additional projects. So I'm maybe highlighting that on this map somehow. It's like there. I don't know how I would message that, but No. Thank you. This map's great.
I see what you're saying about in development. Maybe saying new instead of open, something like that.
Yeah. Exactly.
Susan, comment.
Yeah, this is really exciting. Thank you for sharing this with us before you make a release. I think all of these, I've heard about the long desire for the Francis and Claire Place, for something there. And I'm just excited with a number of units and larger units, the Barber Apartments, that's a great location. And for 3 and 4 bedrooms and innovative housing, they're such a wonderful developer. So I think this is all very exciting. And the exceeding of goals is very thrilling. It comes at a good time. So yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for all your work on this.
Of course, Alan.
Yeah, thanks. I just echo what all my colleagues have said. This is really amazing. And I think for those of us that have been in the process for a long time to see this sort of final map and how it filled in. And even for those of us that have been looking at this map over time and thinking, wow, how is this really gonna play out? It's really amazing to see this moment, frankly. And I also say that, my sense is that with all the work that staff and the Bureau has done, that that you're not, your strategy isn't hope on LIHTC. And I greatly appreciate you all putting yourselves out there to get these projects in and push them forward. And if there are things that you think that we can do on the committee to help move your strategy with the state forward, then it might be worth a discussion. I've heard certainly that conversation in other places, and there is a lot of stuff happening, like you say, in the context. There's Metro bonds, there's other developers that are chasing those dollars. And so It's an environment where lots of folks are looking for resources. So anything we can do to help prioritize this, certainly open to it. The one thing I will circle back to that came to me while you were talking about the PSH pieces and how that evolved, and this is totally off topic, it's not really what we do here, but it would be interesting to talk also about the demographics of folks that are getting access to the PSH units, and particularly with the overrepresentation of some communities of color in that sphere. So again, we're not the supportive housing oversight folks, but it was just curious to me that for us to have such a fantastic intersection with that, and then be sure that we recognize the impacts on those communities also that are being served by all this work. So just a thought about when we started to talk about that, but I know that's not our purview. So, but anyway, again, congrats and thanks. I did serve on the boss for that, and I don't remember all the projects. These ones seem great, and they all seem great. And so it's sort of one of those situations where it's hard to pick winners and losers, but the entire community wins when we look at a map like this.
Thanks for your comments. Alan, any closing comments, Director Callahan?
I just would like to express my gratitude again to the team at the Bureau and the team at the Bond Oversight Committee. Just to let you know, Alan, that the PSH projects were the top selection by the committee moving forward. So, and I will also let you know that it's not part of the Portland Housing Bond, but we are making one additional recommendation for Metro Bond funding for an integrated PSH project. We'd reach the tail end of our housing dollars with Portland Housing Bond to be able to spend, but there's also another project coming out of the ones that you reviewed. And so we're very excited about, we can't announce it in the same way because we have to wait for Metro approval, but we will be announcing that today. So thank you all just for all of your support, and it's, we'll make the changes to the map, and we've got a lot to follow up on after this meeting with getting ready for the annual report. And I hope at some point we get to sit in a room together again and do a community celebration. I think that would be great.
Appreciate that. I think we all would agree it would be wonderful to actually be in the atmosphere where you can see the eyes and feel the body heat, where there's actual interaction of humanity. Appreciate everybody's work today. Thanks, Bond Oversight Committee, for your continued engagement and involvement, and Portland Housing Bureau staff, all of the work and the energy that you put into it. Thanks, community, for watching and leaning in. If you have ongoing questions, concerns, feedback, thoughts, you are more than encouraged to contact directly the Portland Housing Bureau. You see the staff that is present, and they'll be more than responsive to either direct you with the information that you're inquiring or respond to you directly. Our next Bond Oversight Committee meeting will be on the first Thursday of April. It will also be at 9:30, from 9:30 to 11 through this same meeting. And then we're planning for the first Thursday in July and the first Thursday in October. So if you will identify that, capture it on your calendar, and we'll see you again real soon. Take care, everybody. Have an excellent Thursday.